I began this work when a chronic illness kept me from living a normal life, living any kind of life really. And I realised there was no help for me outside of myself. The specialists and the allopathic medical care didn't have the answers I was looking for, didn't really have any answers for me at that time. Although I'm sure things have moved on a lot by now. Anyway, I was unable to work and I turned within. And I turned within and I began asking questions. I didn't know then, but I knew I was asking my higher self, although I wouldn't have named it like that. I was asking the moreness I knew was there. I always had this sense there was something guiding me, something looking out for me. All those moments when I'd had little intuitions whispered in my ear had shown me that there was more to Lucy than just what I could see in the mirror. So I began to turn inwards and ask that sense of, I don't know what this I is that I'm asking, but I'm asking. What do I do? What do I need to know? How can I help myself? And more importantly, what am I doing to create this situation I found myself in? So I began from a place of taking responsibility. And sure enough, I began to find books. I'd be randomly browsing a bookstore and one book would stand out from all the others and I'd pick it up, open it randomly, and there would be written down on the page an answer to an internal question I'd been asking that day or that week and or that moment even. And I began to realize that I was dialoguing with this moreness that I was aware of. That if I asked questions, answers would come in unexpected ways and they'd reach me in my ordinary life. It wasn't just books on bookcases, but people would turn up and would start a conversation about something that directly related to exactly what I'd been asking in my heart to know more about. They'd drop a name or they'd point me in the direction of something. And I followed the pointers that felt right. And when I say felt right, somebody would say something and I'd feel like a whole body vibration, a yesness as a kind of physical sensation. And I would follow that up. And, or I'd follow my excitement. I'd always learn to trust my excitement, to feel a real yes to something when I was presented with an option. Do you want to do this or not? Well, I could feel whether I would have a yes or a no. And I use that very rudimentary sense of guidance and I use it still and I trust it still. Even though my guidance systems have become arguably more sophisticated, I think it begins with and boils down to always inner guidance, that sense of how we feel and know our yeses and how we feel and know our no's and how we can trust our internal guidance system to be registering our true responses over and above our mental processes. They've always come second for me because my mental reasoning can really miss the point a lot of the time. It's dealing with limited information. I learned that quite early on, that if I thought my way towards an answer when I'd already felt my yes or my no, and I came up with a different answer, it would always be the wrong one. It would never lead me straight or lead me to what I want. There would always be some kind of dissonant experience. So that's how I got started. What I uncovered was a passion for meditation, exploring the unseen realms. Now, I started without any sense of what I was doing, without a clue. And I opened to all kinds of phenomenon. Some strong experiences, visceral experiences, visual experiences, phenomena that couldn't be explained. And a lot happened very fast when I just simply sat down and began to meditate without really having a direction or knowing what I was doing. I was just sitting down with this knowing that there was more out there, that I'd always felt somehow I should be able to access it. And here was the time finally. Now I couldn't work and live in the real world for a while, to pursue that passion of mine. Some of the experiences I had didn't feel safe. And the instant I felt unsafe, I shut everything down. But I was determined not to abandon it. So instead of turning my back on it, I knew that there were masters and specialists out there who would know much, much more about what I was doing and how, more importantly, how to do it safely. So I was back then an academic and I took an academic approach. I found a writer. Her name was Dionne Fortune. She wrote in the last century, well, 19th century, I think now, if my history is right. But she was a leader in her field. She was, although she was up there in accomplishment with the likes of Aleister Crowley, she had the impeccable integrity that that particular individual, I think, from my perspective, seemed to lack from where I was looking. And she prioritized exactly what I would prioritize when she spoke about exploring what was then referenced as the occult. Her belief was that it no longer needed to be kept behind closed doors and relegated to a few mystics who had access to the secrets and held and guarded the keys. She sensed that the time was coming when occult, as it was called, wisdom, would become readily available to everyone and for everyone. And so she made a real priority of teaching how to access this moreness of the unseen realms safely. She also worked with a mystical Kabbalah. That was a map, if you like, or a template for the alchemical arrangement of forces, universal forces, but forces also to be found in human beings, and how it looked at how the map of alchemical forces in the human beings, centers for consciousness, reflected universal maps, maps that could be found if you looked outwards, if you like. So I began reading her books and I absorbed them and I was excited, and everything I read felt like a remembering rather than new information. I very quickly learned how to do what I was doing safely, but I also very quickly, almost immediately, arrived at what for me remains the most important thing of any awareness expansion activity whatsoever. Any seeking to become more aware, which is, why am I doing this? What's the point of it? So although I had the excitement of, I just know there's more and I want to access that because we can, because we're more than this, we're more than what I see, and I know it's there. What was more important to that than me was, there is this I that seems to know. It seems to be there ready to guide me in every detail and every area of my life. When I've really been in danger, it's whispered how to get to safety. When I've been making a seemingly unimportant choice, it's guided me to the choice that would bring me greater happiness and peace and joy than one that would lead to dissonance, or just less happiness and peace and joy. And I'd learned that there was this sense of I, or this sense of moreness. And it was benevolent and caring and always had my best interests at heart, but always seemed to know what was for me in a way that I would fully agree with. And so I began to develop a language for this I, and they used the language back then, I think, of higher self. And I know a lot of people still use that phrase, although there's semantic arguments about exactly what that means. But for me, it referenced the God that I am, the God self that I always sensed was there guiding me. And the God self that I kind of felt was one with all of everything. So very early on, I dedicated my everything I was going to explore, everything I was going to uncover, everything, every experience I was going to have, that it would all grow from this foundation. It would all be held within this container of, everything would be included within my core spiritual goal, which was like the foundation, the circumference, and the center of everything I was going to uncover, of everything I was calling for and ever asking, that I was always calling for that first and last and in between. And that was to align the will of my human self with the divine will I am. Back then, I felt the sense of just aligning this human self with this higher self. That was my spiritual goal. And although the words didn't quite fit what I meant, and they still don't, I knew what I was doing this for. And that still stands today. There's no real difference. That's everything I've been through, everything I've explored, everything I've experienced, all falls within this core spiritual goal. One of the few occasions where I'm happy to use the word spiritual there. You could say core goal for conscious awareness, for becoming more conscious. There's lots of different ways of phrasing that. What I learned was that the master, teacher, guru, guide, and healer all came from within. I began in the continuation of asking questions and receiving answers from all kinds of different directions. I began to engage with channeled literature and people who channeled amazingly well, very experienced, very dedicated, very benevolent, and in high integrity channelers that brought through information from unconditionally loving sources, and that worked with people to help us become more conscious of how we could do this too, not just channel, but open to the more of who we are and physically, humanly experience that moreness. So for me, this is another thing, another core spiritual goal, is that all this is for not abandoning humanity, not closing the eyes in meditation and leaving the planet to have phenomenal experiences, which we can. And there is a phenomenally beautiful benefit to doing that. But my particular chosen direction was to always start from the earth, being grounded, being centered, being in a physical awareness, and not abandoning that, but maintaining it while expanding into the realms of dimensionality, the realms of divine I am awareness. And so that shaped my progression, my own evolution, the own experiences, and who I came into contact with. I always had this sense that, and I would only ever allow myself to connect with teachers and masters on the outer planes who would facilitate my own waking up to and remembering my own mastery, who would show me ways to access the keys I had within me, the gifts I had within me, and show me how to answer questions even more deeply by turning within and allowing. I set my higher self up as the gatekeeper very early on, and that everything, because this I that I am that seemed to know what was for me in my highest possible, most benevolent alignment. And I empowered it as a gatekeeper to everything that I attracted, everyone I called to me. And I set it as a guardian for all the information I received, so that what was for me landed and what wasn't passed me by. And in this way, I really consciously chose to connect only with those guides and teachers who would awaken my own ability to access inner knowing, inner mastery, inner gifts, inner healing, and to evolve from within. So it was a path of self-mastery, but I couldn't possibly have walked it alone. And there were many teachers, guides, gurus, and masters, both on the inner planes as unseen friends and guides, and in the outer reality as human beings and people, whom I've connected with along the way, who've swum into my vision and presented themselves as, this is what's in front of you now. They haven't presented themselves, but have my reality has presented them to me as, this is what you sit with now. This is what you access now. This is where you go now. And every single being has been one to empower the embodied realization that for everything we seek, we turn within, and it can be unlocked from within us. Now, of course, there's a huge responsibility goes hand in hand with this. And again, early on, I learned that the more I wanted to become conscious, the more responsibility I was going to take. The less, shall we say, intervention there would automatically be to protect me and do things for me. So the more you know, the more you take responsibility for being aware of. And one of the biggest things I chose to take responsibility from, because I'd started all this with a debilitating condition, was what, how am I misusing my energy? What am I doing with my, and I understood energy to be thoughts, emotions, patterns and behaviors, actions and states of being. And I began to, well, I started from asking that question. And so I've always put first my own personal processing as my pathway to evolution. There comes a point, and there has come a point, where personal processing doesn't end, but takes a second place. And it takes second place to creation, being a creator, falling in love with love itself, and asking, what am I here for? What am I here to create? Where is my excitement, which is my internal compass? Where is it pointing me? And what's now? What's here now in that picture? So now, after many years of prioritizing internal processing, which was very much about asking, oops, what do I need to see? What's for me? What have I, what are the points I've missed? Why have I got myself here? It shifted to not so much what's for me, but what am I for? How do I fall even more in love with love itself? And what's for me now in terms of my creations? What am I facing? What do I do? What are the actions for me to take? But that dance between the internal and the external is seamless and loses its sense of separation. And it doesn't stop me from processing and from needing to face and take responsibility for what there is in me that is resistant or is blocked or is limiting and constrictive. It's just shifted the emphasis so that I start by aligning with my creative energies. And sure enough, that will support me in very lovingly, actually, usually, in holding and dissolving my blocks and my limitations, my resistances and my illusions that keep me small and that stop me from moving forward in the way I want to. But my point is that it begins within us, and we are, I feel, the master co-creators of our own reality. Although we start from a position of being unconscious of this, more or less completely, I think, from, if I speak from my own perspective, and gradually learning how to become more conscious of where and how and what are the principles and the laws at work, what are the tools we use, and what is it exactly and precisely that creates our reality for us, and when we create an experience we'd rather not have, what do we do about that? How can we change it? How can we rewrite the scripts coded into us, some of which we've inherited, some of which we've developed, and some of which are, shall we say, built in for how we're going to experience our own reality? So that's how I started, was realizing that I created a reality for myself that wasn't what I wanted, and realizing that because nobody else was actually going to be able to help me with it, that I was the only person who could help myself, led me to realize that I could help myself, and then led me to uncover the tools, the guides, the sources, and the resources that showed me how I could help myself change my reality by rewriting those dissonances I perceived from within. Now, it's funny, when I started working consciously, I stopped judging myself. I stopped judging those parts of me that caused me suffering, caused me pain, or caused me to have experiences that I did not want, that hurt me. Before I began working consciously, I would judge myself all the time. And I would turn upon myself such self-loathing. It was phenomenal. It was so, so very destructive. Because, of course, here I was in a creation that was terrible, and I knew somehow deep down this must be all my fault. And yet that was a knowing that was stumbling around in the dark, misunderstanding itself. So it turned into self-loathing, and becoming more conscious directed me towards being more self-loving. And there's a depth to that throwaway phrase that I'm not going to go into right now, but it's a process for me. There isn't a switch of being self-loathing or self-loving, but a process of uncovering, ever uncovering more of what being self-loving possibly could mean. But at least it did change my direction from blaming myself to taking greater ownership and realizing there was potential, there was hope, I could charge my excitement. Everything I thought was what I really wanted to do wasn't wrong. Actually, I was right. And there was a universe ready to, and beyond, ready to support me in following my dreams, pursuing my purpose, uncovering the gifts of all of who I am, and walking in the world as a more of who I am, step by step, day by day, pixel by pixel, process by process. So in terms of walking in the world as who I really am, that again is not an end goal, a definitive thing. It's an ever deepening adventure. However, I decided that if I was going to meditate, if I was going to expand my awareness and have these experiences of my own multidimensionality and the divine I am awareness, then I wanted to be fully connected to that moreness in every facet of my external life, that I wanted to dissolve the sense of separation between the internal and the external. I wanted to be able to do the washing up, catch the bus, be in a shop, go to work, talk to people, drive in a car, and still be all of who I was, not have to shut down that sense of who I am. And it was because as I touched the more of who I am, I felt myself relax into that moreness, as if I'd always been waiting for this. I felt my shoulders would drop, metaphorically speaking, and release that sense of waiting and tension there'd been in trying to just be human, trying to just be small, trying to just be little Lucy. And so the little I that I am. And so I practiced staying conscious, staying present, staying physically and somatically aware while I meditated. Then I practiced being centered in awareness, in presence, and opening to notice my thoughts, my emotions, what was going on around me in my environment, what other people were saying to me, sounds, light, movement, sights, and staying fully anchored in my center so that I was perceiving the holographic movie of my life from this centered place of I am awareness. But my meditations early on, which are full of energy work and light work and channeling this energy here and this alchemical arrangement there, for ascension and awakening and super fun, exciting light work. I practiced those while I was on the bus. I practiced them in the city. I practiced them everywhere I went. And I practiced applying the principles in them to, for example, toxic city environments, keeping myself safe and transmuting toxicity in my field when I walked through a busy, murky city. I had a lot of fun with this, but it was my tao. It's what I was walking with. And so when that developed into I am awareness, I continued the same practice. I didn't feel that satsang, for example, where we all sat in presence, was the only place where I would sit in presence. I didn't feel I needed to abandon my humanity in order to access my divinity, or the other way around. So I remember I sat in satsang for the very first time, having been guided there. My logic would never have walked me to that door, but my guidance did. And funnily enough, all of my co-mentors, co-workers, co-energy workers, had all separately received the same guidance to sit with the same guru on the same day. And we all turned, as funny, actually, that was organized by someone I subsequently met 3 years later, who turned out to be a very good friend of mine. And I only met her after I'd moved countries. And we all met and we all sat in this satsang. And I decided there and then, as I listened to people saying, I can sit with you here and I am connected, but when I walk out of the room, I lose the connection. And I thought, that doesn't have to happen. I know that doesn't have to happen. And I'd automatically gone in there using all my usual practices of being fully physically conscious, somatically aware and grounding and earthing and being present and staying fully conscious of my environment and what was going on around me, and being invited through that doorway into I am awareness by the phenomenal being who'd blessed us with her presence. And we had a lunch break that day, and I remember we were right in the heart of Brighton city centre, really at the busiest part, and in terms of traffic. And I thought, well, you know I'm not going to leave this behind. From here on now, I walk with this. This isn't something I'm prepared to lose. And I stepped out into the busy city centre and went for a walk, maintaining this I am awareness that she had invited us deeply into. And everything changed again from that day. I sat with her again another day and then another day, and then she was gone, I believe. And that changed everything again for me. I just knew that this was it. This was what it was all about. That it was about being humanly here and physically walking as much of the divine I am that I could know myself to be. In actual fact, I spent several years, well, I think it was 2 years, living almost as a monk, but in the middle of a city. I was in deep, deep, deep contemplation with this every day, every night. I ventured out of my house for the usual sorts of things. And all the rest of the time, I was sitting deeply in this awareness and falling ever more deeply inwards, exploring, remembering. And I allowed everything I thought I knew to be emptied out. And as it was, in that emptiness, certain things reappeared, things that were really at the heart of the truth of who, at this moment, I could say I am, here and now, from this perspective. And as everything emptied out, I was shown things that reverberated with a truth way deeper than anything I'd experienced up until now, and yet there was such a continuity to it. What I was being shown, what I was uncovering, and I don't mean being shown as though I was an external spectator, but I had this direct experience, this immersive direct experience of understanding, of just knowingness that came from, and I love the phrase, I can't use it, but this knowingness without really knowing, understanding, not able to explain how you know, but a knowingness that cannot be argued with, And it does not live in the mind. It's not fervor. It's not belief. It's not an idea. It's a full body direct realization, immersive direct realization. And it arrived when I let go of all the ideas of the mind, when I let go of the memories of the past, and when I let go of everything I thought I was, and I transcended that idea of self. That's where clarity came, knowingness came. And I knew that knowingness was subjective, but that it was relevant to the moment, and it was what was here for me now, and I would just have to go with it. And the beautiful thing was, the knowingness that was being revealed to me was a divine alchemy of our, what I later understood to be referenced as our divine human blueprint, but it was a divine alchemy of the evolution of the soul, or of the individuation of consciousness within oneness. And how that alchemy of our evolution from our inception lives within us as sacred centers and pathways that form, that make up the histories of all we've ever been, of all we are, of all we've moved through, of how we arrived in this here and now present moment from being birthed within the totality of all that is. And how that can be, and how that pathway of evolution of the self within the all maps out the sacred centers and divine pathways of what I then learned to call our human blueprint, the encodements that contain the scripts for all of, and the maps for all of how we'll experience ourselves to be in this human expression. And although this appeared and I sat with it for many years and developed it and continue to deepen my exploration of it and have more and more revealed to me in that beautiful emptiness and emptying out, nonetheless, I could trace back even through my unconscious days how this had always been a part of me and always been at the heart of the whispering of, I know this. This is like little snapshots that had shown themselves throughout my life, little experiences which fell very neatly into this knowingness, so that it wasn't something that arrived, it was something I was, that I was uncovering. Something that the shape I was in the universe, in the sum total of all that was. So what I share in this human blueprint work is really what I've uncovered is the embodiment of a certain perspective, a set of skills, experience, knowledge, and understanding that I believe I've developed over lifetimes and simply remembered here and now by stripping away everything I've put in the way of it and allowing it to be uncovered more clearly. But an understanding of the human genome from what I'm going to say is the 12th dimension. So without going into how I can justify saying that, I just want to say that the 12th dimension, I understand it as where we are, the dimension of consciousness, where individuations interact as moving patterns of light mandalas. I've dwelt there and spent some time there. Part of me is very familiar with it. A lot of me isn't. Would struggle to put into words how this works. And yet, viewing the human blueprint from the dimension where we are, moving mandalas of light and color that is consciousness that carries information, it's very complex. And yet, the unifying principle that allows us to explore the human blueprint has a great simplicity to it, a beautiful simplicity that doesn't require us to have journeyed off to nth dimensions, to have had I am awareness realizations, or to be masters on channels in energy work and self-awareness. a centralizing principle of aligning the rhythms and patterns, the mandala rhythms and patterns of our human blueprint, aligning ourselves at the 12th dimension, is as simple as meditating and centering. There's a little more to it than that. There's so much more that you could explore and uncover if you got excited about it. But essentially, it's about centering within ourselves and taking some care and making some conscious choices about how we use our intention to direct our attention. So the reason I share this is simply because it is exciting. Because I know enough to trust my excitement, and that when I act on what excites me the most, from a place of, as my dear friend Callie would say, surrendering to the unconditional love I am that we are, then there will be something for someone. And it's not for me to know who or how they pick it up, but to trust that excitement is a very good guide. And one of the things that excites me the most is helping other people access their inner guidance to uncover who they are when everything else falls away, when we get beyond what we've put in the way of uncovering who we really are. Not really about imposing my pattern on somebody else and saying, I found the way, you should follow my map, but actually creating the circumstances that are conducive to each of us finding the map we already have within us for who we are, what excites us, and how we're going to be guided from within to transform, to heal, to grow, to expand into the more of who we are, more and more and more living the truth of our gifts expressed in whatever ways we enjoy, whatever ways excite us the most. And that's a beautiful thing. It's not like we each have one purpose, which we must fulfill in a certain way. When we uncover what's at the core of who we are, what we're carrying, and each of us is carrying some beautiful different template, some truth remembered, yet to be manifested, or ready to be manifested even more expansively. And when the thing that really excites me about this is that when one person uncovers a little bit more of what excites them the most, of the shape of who they are in the universe and their unique song, their unique imprint, everyone benefits, everything benefits. It lights up anyone who comes into contact with them, who's in any way open to receiving from those gifts. And that is, I feel, where we're at collectively in our evolution right now, is that we're here to light each other up by remembering who we really are.